This is a production of Cornell University.
All right, everybody, we're going to go ahead. We're going to go ahead and get started. Call the meeting to order. Carl, you want to go ahead with the roll call?
Habir El Samari. Chris Islick. Samuel Brezzani. Kate Carter Cram.
Here.
Charles Day. Jordan Dotzel. Cody Duell. Bruce Epstein. Natalie Gonzalez. Sabrina Graham. Bridget Hayes. Amar Nayatali. Kyle Carnata.
Here.
David Kent. Alexandra Kuyastova. Genesis Lee.
Here.
Stephanie Lopez. Malia Matthews.
Here.
Harshad Mehta.
Here.
Marina Minnelli.
Here.
Need Moore.
Here.
Andrew Murtha. Chris O'Connor.
Here.
Christine Oanewa. Akash Patel.
Here.
Noriellis Perez. Damian Sharp.
Here.
Georgia Smith.
Here.
Jack Timmons. William Wayne.
Here.
Josh Washington.
Here.
Anna Lunch.
Here.
And Simon Yang.
Here.
We have 18 voting members present.
Okay, awesome. Well, it's great to see everybody. Happy Valentine's Day. Thanks for taking the time to come spend some time with us. Good to see you guys online. Good to see some of you in person. It's nice to see some people without some masks on. I feel like I don't know what half of you guys look like underneath there, so it's kind of cool. All right, so we will move into late additions to the agenda. Does anybody have any late additions that we need to add for today? All right, seeing none, we can move on to the approval of the meeting minutes. Does anybody have any amendments or changes to the meeting minutes that they would like to propose? Okay, seeing none, is there anybody in opposition of opposing the meeting minutes with unanimous consent? Okay, we can approve the meeting minutes for January 31st. All right, so we're going to move on to presentations. We have two today, but first we're going to hear from Gina. She's going to kind of give us a little bit of a lay of the land as far as UPSA goes. I thought it might be kind of important to do this. We had aimed to do this last semester, but with the various elections and different things, just kind of never got on the schedule. But I think with the new members and the kind of turnover we had at the end of the semester, it's kind of nice to have a little bit of refresher and an introduction for the new members as to, you know, how the GPSA operates. So with that, I will hand it over to Gina.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate the opportunity. Let me share my screen. Can you see my screen?
No.
Not yet.
Nope.
Not yet. All right. Hang on. Let's do this. What now? Are you looking at my big screen or the presenter screen?
Big screen.
The right one.
All
right.
As Preston said, and again, I want to thank you all for making some time on the agenda. I am grateful for you all for participating and stepping in and stepping up. And I'm going to give you a brief history on sort of shared governance and the GPSA, and then a very, very brief overview of Robert's Rules of Order and Parliamentary Procedure, and then I can take any questions at the end. The assemblies at Cornell, together with the Faculty Senate, are the expression of the university's commitment to shared governance and constituent representation. So the faculty have a Senate, and the staff and students have assemblies, which are elected, representative, constituent bodies with some amount of delegated authority. In 1955, almost 100 years after the founding of the university, the Board of Trustees transferred the responsibility for non-academic policies to the president of the university. Prior to that, the faculty had made decisions regarding policies and procedures affecting students and staff. Cornell's shared governance bodies are an outgrowth of the unrest on campus in 1969, which culminated in a mass meeting of over 7,000 people camped out in Barton Hall for 3 days discussing conditions on campus with the ultimate recommendation that a self-governance system be established on campus which was open, representative, and democratic. This resulted in the establishment of the assemblies, the university ombudsman, the former campus code of conduct, which is now the student code, and the student elected trustee. The assemblies are active and present in recent campus climate issues, including student mental health, racial justice, support for American and Indigenous students, ethical concerns with international collaborations, community support during the COVID pandemic, divestment from fossil fuels, and many others. Cornell is one of relatively few institutions in the nation allowing the campus community to directly elect constituent members to its highest governing body. The current grad and professional student elected trustee is Liz Davis Frost, who I just saw on the screen. Hi, Liz, and thank you for serving. Each assembly focuses on issues relevant to the constituency it represents. Each of the assembly's memberships are designed to represent the diversity of the Cornell population it represents, and each assembly serves as a bridge between the larger population and the administration. The assemblies, like the Faculty Senate, receive their authorities from the Board of Trustees. The authority includes recommending changes to university policies that affect constituents, subject to approval by the president, who reviews and responds to all resolutions passed by the assemblies. The assemblies and their committees work directly with administrative units to arrive at ways of improving university policies and life on campus. The governance system enables members of the community to have access to information involvement in matters of concern to them, and the authority to examine those issues and make recommendations to the appropriate administrative offices and the president. The assemblies are in a position of not only providing a community evaluation of current and proposed administrative actions, but acting as advocates for them as well. The success of the assemblies and Cornell's system of shared governance by the community as a viable means of solving problems is dependent on three elements: hardworking, dedicated volunteers who are committed to serving the university, and that's you all, thank you again, an administration, including middle-level managers, which supports and works closely with the assemblies throughout the decision-making process, and active communication between the assemblies and the constituents they serve. All assemblies have a mandate to represent constituent interests and bring issues of concern to university leadership. Legislative authority to recommend changes to university policies that affect constituents are subject to the approval by the president. The GPSA and the SA are both funded through their respective student activity fees, which both assemblies have been delegated to determine every 2 years. The office of the assemblies is in 109 Day Hall, and we welcome visitors and are always happy for you to drop by. We're a staff of 6, though soon to be 5. Wendy, as you know, has been a key member of our team for the past 2 years as our senior coordinator and directly supporting the GPSA. We're sad to say her last day will be next Friday. I'm coming up on 15 years at Cornell with 8 in the office of the assemblies. We have 4 student clerks, with Senior Carell Fasineau having served as a GPSA clerk for the past 3 years. Thank you, Carell. Together, we organize, attend, record, report, and support all of the assemblies and their committees. In addition, we support the GPSA and its committees, and we maintain a website with tools for the members of the assemblies and their committees. We're here to serve as a resource for any members and any matters related to the GPSA, your committees, as they relate to the assemblies or shared governance in general. And now a few slides on the procedures and processes of the assemblies as they relate to parliamentary procedure and Robert's Rules of Order. Robert's New Rules of Order is a set of rules for conduct at meetings that allows everyone to be heard and allows the assembly to make decisions without confusion. With sensitivities to those members less comfortable with speaking up, and in an effort to engage those whom elected roles may be new, the use of Robert's Rules of Order ensures there is space at the table for all voices, the loud and the quiet. The role of the president is to moderate the debate, unless they're engaged in the issue or resolution, in which case the role of the moderator and authority of chair moves to the executive vice president until the matter is settled and the vote is taken. All assemblies are ruled by their governing documents. Some may be changed internally, some require the approval of the president. But these are your documents, and there are processes to change, amend, and table them. The charter is the basic rules of the assembly. There are stringent amendment requirements, which must be approved by the president of the university. The bylaws are the detailed procedures and rules for assembly and committee operations. They can usually be amended by a simple majority. Standing rules are approved by the assembly and must be renewed each year. A few basic principles to parliamentary procedure. They include courtesy and justice for all, consideration of only one subject at a time, the rights of absent members to be protected, the minority must be heard, and the will of the majority must prevail. A few of the basic concepts. Quorum. Quorum is the minimum number of voting members required to do business, which is half plus one. A motion is an action considered by the assembly. To be on the floor is the state of being actively considered by the assembly, such as there's a motion on the floor. Half having the floor is having the exclusive right to address the assembly regarding a motion. An executive session is any portion of a meeting open only to members of the assembly, both voting and non-voting. A motion is a proposal that the assembly take certain action or that it express itself as holding certain views. You would ask to be recognized by the chair, either by raising your hand or placard, and perhaps be placed on a speaker's list. The voting member then makes a motion, and a different voting member would second the motion. We have a great cheat sheet for this process. It's available on our website. I'm going to ask either Wendy or Carell to put that in the chat. And that's a handy link. We can also send that out as a general resource for you all after the meeting. It's important when debating your motions to listen to the other side, to focus on the issues and not the personalities, to avoid questioning motives, and be polite. Legislative actions of the assemblies are most typically drafted as resolutions. The process for developing a resolution has several steps, allowing for engaging key stakeholders and soliciting community input. This should take some amount of time prior to coming to the assembly for a vote. A quick checklist includes checking for legislative history, polling constituents, making sure you've presented at all relevant committees, solicit feedback from relevant offices, and have the support from as many members as possible. And then determine if the issue is still unresolved after you've gone through those steps. And if so, then proceed with drafting your resolution. That's it, thank you very much. I'll take some questions now, but even if afterwards, please be in touch. We need to hear from you. We want to hear from you. Your candid feedback helps us help you. And that's our role in all of this. The more we know, the more helpful we can be in helping you achieve your goals. And the sooner you let us know what you're planning, the more time we have to assist and prepare. So I'm happy to take any questions and mine.
Thank you so much, Gina. I really appreciate it.
Thank you again for the time.
Yeah, so does anybody have any questions for Gina?
No? Well, we can English slides.
Yeah, Gina, is there any way you can send this out to us, the slides?
Absolutely.
The recording?
Yep.
Okay, awesome.
How do we check for legislative history?
Did you catch that, Gina?
Question?
How do you check legislative history?
Yeah.
All of the assembly's website, which is assembly.cornell.edu, has all of the terms of the assemblies. Everything is a matter of public record. So if you, let me see, I can show you quickly, except my screen is right now. There we go. I can give you a quick example. It has a fairly intuitive and functional search function. Let me share this screen with you all. There we go. So this is the homepage of the Office of the Assembly's website. And you can either do it by resolution. If you know that there's a resolution, you were looking for something, you can search in this search bar. This will search all of the assemblies. So this is by term. So you can search an assembly here. You can search it by term. Or you can just do a general, broad, I don't know quite what I'm looking for or when it was, but we want to look up divestment. And it will give you everything and going here's something from 2014. So there's some quick and easy ways that you can do that yourselves. We're always also happy to help. So if you can't find what you're looking for or you're not quite sure where to start, send an email or stop by the office and we can help you get started. We actually have hardbound volumes of assembly actions going back to, I want to say 1977. So if it's not on the website, spend a day in the archives and you can really pretty much find what you're looking for.
Thank you.
Any more questions for Gina? Okay. All right. Well, thank you again, Gina. We really appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you.
All right, so our next presentation is from Liz, who is our graduate and professional student elect trustee. We'll give her the floor. Yeah, you can use the podium might be good up there if you want.
Around a paper sheet. Sorry about that.
Okay. If it's just me, you can just mark me as attendance.
Is anyone else non-vote?
Okay.
Wait,
can they hear me up here? Can y'all hear me?
I can hear you, Liz, on the Zoom.
Poverty, equity, and gender justice with this initiative. And so this is a quote from a Columbia MPH student. It says, "I don't get to choose to have my period, and this means that I must access the necessary products and services to manage through my menstrual cycles, but access does not transcend equally nor equitably across different levels of income, countries, ages, gender, and race. I remember not being able to buy pads because our family only had enough to buy milk or to fill up the car tank. Sometimes I would rely on toilet paper, which wasn't sufficient, so I would leak through my pants during school and then miss class trying to clean the stain." And so for those of you who don't menstruate, solution. And it's, I get, in like a lot of the issues that we see in the country and in the world, it's like exacerbated on a college campus, especially considering like how big our campus is, how far you have to walk to get to things. All of these like compounding factors make this initiative so, so important for Cornell specifically, but also across the world. So what are the benefits to Cornell? Again, reduce barriers for economically marginalized grad and undergraduate students. And just a quick sidebar, we've been running this part of the program since like fall 2020. And I'm sure most of you have seen these products in bathrooms on campus. And there's a QR code like on the flyer where we ask people to fill out a survey if they use the products or if they just like wanted to fill out the survey. And these, people who use these products is like equal across the board for faculty, staff, students, undergrad and professional students, and also visitors. And so this is not just an important initiative for Cornell students, but every person in the Cornell community currently, and also people who potentially want to be here. And so a step closer to our any person, any study, regardless of identities held, and also a chance to be among the leaders on this issue in the Ivy League and really across the country and academic spaces. So there are like, the nation of Sweden has like free period products now in like all of their schools. California, like last year, has a mandate for free period products in school. Columbia does this on their campus. There's like a handful of campuses that do this. And I personally think since Cornell strives to be this world-class 21st century university, this is one of like the very, this is a very tangible way that we can accomplish this goal, and we already have the foundation laid out, and you will soon understand why we are at a bit of a roadblock to get this program embedded in the Cornell identity, right? Okay. So, history of Free the Tampon. So, the spring of 2017, so that was my freshman spring of undergrad, there was a collaboration between the Women's Resource Center at the time, or the Women's Resource Center Executive Board, which is now the Gender Justice Advocacy Coalition, and the Student Assembly to do like a pilot program of this Free the Tampon initiative, where these products were put in, and when I say these products, I mean tampons and pads only, were put in about 9 academic buildings, and they were only up until the products ran out. And it was like a rather small amount of money, like 20,000 or something like that. And once those products were gone out of those out of those 9 buildings, then they just like disappeared. When I was on the Women's Resource Center board when it transitioned to GJAC, and before then, we started having conversations. I think Gina may be able to help me with this. I think it was fall 2018, because Gina was one of the people that I worked with. We were like, okay, this program and this initiative kind of fell through the cracks, and there was a lot of excitement about it. The reason that it first happened was because the Student Assembly put through a resolution, and like students voted, and there was like this, petition, everything. People said this was something they would be interested in. And so the leadership of the WRC and the SA at this time made this happen. But again, the pilot program lasted for like not even a full semester. And then, you know, because of the turnover of undergraduate students, because this was a student assembly initiative, it just kind of, again, fell through the cracks. Like the people who were doing this program were like seniors at the time, and there wasn't like that transfer of knowledge, transfer of connections. And so when myself and the Student Assembly President at the time, or incoming Student Assembly President at the time, you know, we're trying to pick this back up, we started from ground zero, which was pretty frustrating, but also I think it was important for us to build the relationships that we did. So then after like a year and a couple of months of deliberation and trying to find partners and communicate with people across campus, we finally got a $70,000 lump sum of money from the Student Assembly's Infrastructure Committee Fund. So the SAIFC is the acronym. They essentially have like a pot of money that they can give to programs or initiatives every year to do something on campus. And so in that school year, the 2018-2019, I think, academic year, they decided to give that to us, or some of it to us. And so then we spent like another couple of months trying to get, you know, everything together. So we had to find a supplier, which our current supplier is Lola, which is like an organic brand. We had to get the partnership with Facilities on Lock. Shout out to Facilities if anyone on, probably not, but they're great. The Facilities are awesome. And then we also had to kind of get like buy-in from people in different like areas of campus to revamp like the necessity or like the excitement about program. And so, and then we also had to print a bunch of flyers, right? Like we wanted this launch or this part of the program to be different from the initial pilot, because like I knew that I was gonna be gone eventually. That's a lie. I thought I was gonna be gone eventually, and then the pandemic hit my senior year, and I ended up staying for another 2 years so I could do this and also like get a degree, but whatever. And so we like had like we put the QR codes on the flyers, and we were just like very strategic and intentional about how we like set the program up so that like once the people who were involved with its inception were gone, we could continue to pass down the information and the knowledge. And so thankfully, but also unfortunately, this program with the initial purchase of $30,000 or with $30,000 was supposed to launch on March 12th, 2020. But that didn't happen because we all got kicked off of campus. And I cried for a very, very long time. But this pushed the launch of the project back into the fall of 2020, which was actually worked really well and was kind of a silver lining for us because we only had a small amount of money. And so since students weren't on campus as much, that 2020-2021 school year, the money that we had stretched significantly longer than we thought it would. However, on the other end, it made it a little difficult for us to use that data that we were getting from the Qualtrics surveys to kind of chart out like how much money it would take for us, you know, to fund this program for an entire semester. Also, the difference between our program now and the pilot program is that these products are in every single bathroom in every academic building with adequate counter space, as opposed to the 9 buildings and like 4 or 5 of the bathrooms. So we've expanded like the bandwidth of the project tremendously, and we want to keep it that way, but things cost money and we're very close to not having any. And so yeah, so then there was a second round of purchasing in April 2021, you see that on here. And then this past fall semester, we had to get supplemental funding from the Gender Justice Advocacy Coalition to keep the program running until this semester. And once the supplemental money that we just got from that undergraduate student award runs out, there is no money anywhere. So I think the argument, in our ideal world, the people who've been working on this project for a while, we would love to see this program funded, obviously for the long term, but also not coming out of the student activities fee. And so the way that the SAFC gets their $100,000 a year is that they get a portion of the student, you know, activities fee every year, and that's the undergraduate student activities fee. So as I said at the beginning of the presentation, like these products are being used across the board equally by every person in this community or every menstruator in this community. However, it's like exclusively being paid for by undergraduates, which I don't think is okay. So our hopes for the future is that we are able to continue using or having these products in academic spaces, and we also would love to expand to residential and administrative buildings. We've been in the talks with the Big Red Barn to also make the products available there, they're available in Willard Strait, so like a few like spaces that aren't like exclusively academic, but obviously would love to expand more. And then we would love for the funding to be moved from the student activities fee and have an ongoing funding source created. structure of how shared governance works at the university, and then also by soliciting like a major gift from someone who would be like down to endow this program. If we were to talk about difficulties and things that we've learned, so in the original round of purchasing, we made these flyers that said free menstrual products, and there was an X instead of the E in menstruation, and we got a lot of feedback from those Qualtrics surveys that by doing that, even though our intention was to make, you know, the term more inclusive and more equitable, the impact and the outcome was actually gendering a term that didn't need to be gendered. And so we actually, I'm really excited about this, we actually just redesigned our flyers and printed more to address that concern. And so all of the flyers and all of the baskets have been replaced at the start of this semester, which is really dope. And then we also got feedback saying that in addition to pads and tampons, people would also like panty liners in the baskets, and so those have been included as well. And there's also a ton of organizations on campus that talk about period justice. So there have been conversations about adding like menstrual cups to the mix and partnering with Cornell Health and partnering with broader Ithaca community organizations who are also trying to address this same topic. What just happened? I didn't do that. Did I not? Yeah. Okay, sorry. And we've also learned that it's not that the university or Cornell isn't in support of this program. It's that funds are tight just everywhere. My pocketbook is also feeling the funds tight, so I can't be like that upset. I'm thankful that I'm in the position to have access to like all of the administrators, and I've talked to literally all of them. From alumni affairs and development to like the president, like I've talked to literally everyone, and everyone's in support of the program. They're just like, you need to find money for it. And I'm like, okay. So this is where y'all come in, I guess, and why I'm trying to give this presentation to all of the assemblies, because of the power of shared governance. And so one of like the cool things about our university is if like all of the, I guess, and Gina can correct me if I'm wrong on this or if I'm saying it weird, but if all of the assemblies are like in agreement about a topic, like that topic will go to the board for discussion, which I'm on. And again, like it's not in a, and I'm not saying this in a sense of we need to bypass the administration because they don't care and they don't support, but more so like we, In the same sense of the first pilot program where there was like the petition going around and like people were excited about it on campus, we just want to get the same, I guess, momentum and excitement about the initiative. And the best way to do that is, in my opinion, combining our data, saying, you know, everybody is using these products, with also just like support from all of the campus constituencies saying the same thing, and then maybe, hopefully, a community cohesive voice fighting for the same thing will be more powerful than my voice virtually emailing people for 3 years asking them to do this thing. And so yeah, if there are any questions, I think currently we're trying to get kind of like a working group of people from different campus constituencies and different communities to come together and kind of talk about this a little bit more. Currently, the only people that are working on this initiative are myself and then the current GJAC board members, and then the GJAC advisor, Shura, who was my advisor as well. And so I think because like there's so much, again, like appreciation for these products across the board, it would be really cool if, you know, different people who from different communities across the board who like are excited about this could come together and, you know, help us brainstorm ways to continue to build momentum around these things, because quite frankly, I am really tired and I am not gonna stay for another year, 2 years, just it's not. I mean, I could.
the only issue that would actually trigger an automatic sending of a resolution to the Board of Trustees would be divestment. So, which isn't to say that what you just alluded to, that there's great power if all the assemblies come together and endorse or have the same resolution. There's that just serves to amplify the issue and make sure that the president and the administration know that it's important to the whole campus mm-hmm. community, but it wouldn't trigger an automatic bypass of the president and go to the Board of Trustees unless it's about divestment.
Okay, that's a good distinction. I was under the impression that it had only happened as a, like, the only example of that happening before was the fossil fuels divestment conversation, but I guess that makes sense because that was divestment. So thank you for that, Gina.
Thank you.
Josh, you had a question?
Mm-hmm. So a couple of questions. You mentioned like it's only coming, like the funding only coming from students, like assembly, is that correct? Well, I missed why is it just coming from?
So the original pilot, like not the first pilot program in 2017, but the bucket, we got $70,000 from the Student Assembly Infrastructure Committee Fund, and that is a committee on the undergraduate student assembly that gets their funds from the undergraduate student activities fee because it's part of the student assembly. And so, Gina, I'm saying this right?
Yes.
Yes. So yeah.
And when you started working on this, you said it your freshman year here.
Yeah. The spring 2017 pilot was my freshman spring. And then I started, not me, by myself. There were a group of people, but like the conversations like started again about this, I think fall 2018. So that was the fall of my junior year.
So you that was here?
Like, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I came here in 2016, graduated 2020, and then stayed for my MBA program. Yeah. Do I call on people?
Yeah, go ahead.
Is
sure.
that your job?
No, you call.
So that $2 million was kind of like a brainstorm type of deal. We haven't actually had, I'm gonna be honest, it's been like a very busy past year for Liz. And Liz is also not a girl in STEM, so Liz will not be the one running the numbers on this. And Liz has not had the time to find someone to ask someone to run the numbers on this. If any of you were people in STEM who would love to look at a Qualtrics survey to help me figure this out, I would love you and pay you in Girl Scout cookies. However, from my understanding of how endowments work, like they appreciate over time because of the interest. And so from the benchmarking that we've done of other universities who do this, the range of funding this program on an annual basis is anywhere between like 125K to 200K, or between like 100K to 200, depending on like size of the campus, et cetera, et cetera. So that was the number that someone who is better at math than me got of some percentage of interest that would make sense, $2 million. Was that, did I explain that right? I know I didn't explain it right, but close enough, Dean Moore?
So an endowment of $2 million would yield about $100,000 in operating capital each year. So the payout is about 5%. The corpus of that money would be invested and it would grow, and so theoretically you would get more than $100,000 a year as time went by, but that's what you would have to work with if we were to get a $2 million endowment.
Great. Just to say, I might ask university, I'm going to implement this, so if you want to talk after.
Wait, what did you say?
I implement this, my last university.
Okay.
So if you want to talk after, we can talk.
For sure.
Have there been conversations with Cornell Health about how they're able to fund some of the other free products that they give to services and why they can't cover this?
Yes. This is all really expensive. And Cornell Health also has a very tight budget. budget and like haven't been able to do that up to this point because we haven't had the numbers to have like a concrete ask. So we've really been using like this limbo period during the pandemic to like just have a lot of conversations, I guess. But from what I'm gathering, it's like there's not a department on campus that has $100,000 a year to spare. And that's just that. And I don't have, and my team doesn't have the emotional capacity to go to so many departments and ask for, because I mean, I feel like theoretically it would work if I were to go to every department and every college and ask for like 5,000 here, 10,000 here, but I can't do that. And also I don't think that is, I personally don't think that's as effective as if it came from one place, because as leadership changes, I feel like the commitment to that would change. And if, you know, like people who weren't involved in the early stages of the project were to leave and like say one department were to decide that they no longer wanted to give that $5,000, like then that would mess up everything. So
so it seems like one solution would be to go find a donor that's willing to give $2 million or whatever the endowment requires. I assume that itself is tricky though. Like,
yes.
I don't, like, to what extent are students empowered to like go out and find donors? Yeah, you're shaking. People are shaking your head because those donors are being asked for other things for Cornell all the time, right? So.
One can check in with the leadership of fundraising. The only people that you're not allowed to speak to actually are the ones who are already being engaged in conversations. If they're not alums and they're not engaged, it's actually allowed.
So a new donor is allowed.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so by checking in with the leadership of alumni affairs and development, one can solicit funds as long as it's not people within a certain collection.
Has the administration or the president per se like offered or suggested that they would find a way to ask donors or to directly ask donors that are like new donors?
Are you asking me if they said they would?
Yeah.
Which again, I feel like not in a weird position, but it's like hard for, this is my baby. Like this is like one, like a Liz passion project. And even after I leave Cornell, like I know I said that I wouldn't, but I like will be trying to get this funded until I get to a state where I can fund it myself, if it comes down to that. And I think, you know, like being in the spaces and being in the conversations, like there are so many things that also deserve $100,000 a year, you know? And I think Cornell's doing their best to address so many things at one time that like I get it, and I don't know if I and for Liz this is like super important, and if I had the checkbook, I don't know if they use checkbooks, whatever, if I had the checkbook I would sign the check. However, I think there's a Liz for every other initiative that's being fought for that would also say you know, the same thing, and a lot of these initiatives have been, you know, in the works for much longer than I've been here. And so it's like definitely a hard pill to swallow because like I personally had a hard time when I was an undergrad and before, like I had access to as much information as I do now to be like, why don't they want to fund this? They hate me and like to make my life hard. And that's, you know, obviously not the truth. It's just, I can't give you an answer, and no one's really been able to give me an answer other than like our hands are tied and we have buildings that need air conditioning and like people who need scholarships, and like I don't want to be hot, and also like people deserve to be here, so yeah.
All right, any more questions for Liz?
Yes.
This is just like, I think this is a really important initiative. I would like to raise my
But yeah, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you so much, Liz. Appreciate it.
Don't hesitate to reach out.
Great.
Yeah, I think I kind of envision like seeing, you know, this kind of filtering over to like the student advocacy committee, and you know, maybe we can get a resolution drafted up, because you're kind of doing the rounds on this, right? Going to the different assemblies and stuff.
So I go to one of them has a meeting this week and I'm going to. And then I went to the SA last semester.
Employee assembly, you're going to one more
time. I'm going where?
Employee assembly.
Yeah, that, which is fine. So yeah.
So we're going to break out into our respective breakout rooms. For those of us that are in person, I noticed everybody has a laptop. So if you guys could maybe hop on the Zoom and then...
Caucus via
then,
Zoom.
Yeah, I guess. I think that's probably the easiest way to do it. Are we able to...
Hang on.
Okay. Yeah, the Zoom link is, I believe, in the agenda.
It is. It is at the top of the agenda.
It's in the agenda that was sent, though, on Friday. It's not on the agenda that's on the web.
Yeah.
So that's what we go with.
We can break out for, let's see, we usually do like 15. We're running short on time, so we'll do 10. So at 6:40 we'll reconvene. So we'll move into the reports. I'll hand it over to Damien. Do you have anything first today?
No executive reports today. We'll perhaps be in this building, I will say, next week, maybe across the hall, but as COVID guidelines permit, we'll have food at our meetings. All right, so that's my only update for today.
All right, thank you. Kate?
I have no updates, / operations have no updates at this point.
Okay. Appropriations, do you have any updates?
Only update is that I am having handover meetings with
them. Awesome, good to hear. Genesis did not have any updates. Andrew had an update. But, see, David is not here.
So this does not have any updates, but it would be looking forward to form a partnership with Liz if that's possible.
Yeah, I think that that would be awesome. I think that we could probably start working towards a resolution on that. Okay, so Andrew had an update. He said that the February budget period is open and that he's working through changing his email or Caroline's email to his email, just so that all the communications are directed towards him for the finance committee. So that's good. Kyle?
We had our first meeting about the spring gala, which is super exciting, but it's also coming up really, really soon. So one of the things that our committee wants to do, this is programmer, by the way, one of the things that the programming committee wants to do is meet with different graduate and professional student organizations to make sure that, because we really don't have a lot of time, but we want to make sure that voices are heard, we understand what the community wants to see out of a spring gala. We haven't had one in many years, so are we being as inclusive and as accessible as we possibly can be? So if you are a part of one of those student organizations, can you please come talk to me afterwards or shoot me an email, KP as in potato, K59. There's gotta be another, well, Patricia is my middle name, but it's the worst. So KPK59, we would love to come talk to you over the next 2 weeks to make sure, again, that we're just being as accessible as possible and that we're choosing a theme, a venue, and a date that work for you and your community. So come let me know.
Can you tell us what the Spring Gala is for those of us who are new to?
Yeah, I mean, as far as I know, because I have not been to one, social event. It's just a big, safe, blowout social event at the end of the semester to celebrate the year.
Is it like dress up? Is it like?
The rules are really like, there are no rules. We get to kind of dictate, but we're thinking this is something that we really want to go all out for. So yes, it would be dress up. We're going to be selling tickets. There will be music. There will be food. So it will be a really nice event that lets us celebrate each other and our community, especially because there hasn't been one in many years. But there, you know, we're trying to move really quickly because obviously if it's a dress-up event, we need people to know like a month and a half in advance so that they can get something to wear. Yes. So that's the plan.
All right, awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Let's see, is Cody on with us? Do you have any updates for us, Cody?
No success.
Did anybody?
I think he said no.
No updates? Okay. And then, so we added to the agenda any like external committees. I know there are a couple of us here that are a part of external committees. Do we have any updates from?
Our meeting got rescheduled, so I'll have it for the next one.
Okay, cool. I don't have any updates. And then we will move to Dean Bohr or Jan.
One thing that has just recently been wrapped up by the graduate school is a committee that focused on relationships, working relationships between advisors and advisees and developing strategies to set expectations ahead of time so that clashes are less likely to happen. And so we've been creating a library of materials that focus on shared expectations on the front end as people move into advisor-advisee relationships. And that report, that final report, will be available soon. So that might be something that you would be interested in seeing as it becomes available. It is now just working its way through the leadership team of the graduate school and will be widely distributed as it comes out. And then the last thing that I just wanted to mention, you notice there's food today.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to talk about where things stand with regard to COVID right now. The anticipation is that we will probably continue with masks through the end of the semester, most likely. I mean, there's nothing in writing about that, but that's most likely. Those of you who have not uploaded a booster shot or evidence of a booster shot might have noticed that you now are signed up for twice a week testing. So the moment that your booster information gets processed, you will be released from testing. So that is because there is reasonably good evidence in the literature at this point that full vaccination and a booster shot are among the most powerful tools that we have to prevent really severe outcomes from COVID. So that's sort of the stick in the carrot with regard to encouraging you to get your booster shot, upload the data, and it's the testing that's in place to that end. So really, it is about mask wearing. It is about uploading your booster shot information. Pretty much everything else is meant to feel more like normal than it has been for the past 2 years. And so any questions or comments or concerns? And I have to tell you, I'm having a hard time hearing with the masks on, so I'm going to come a little closer if you don't mind.
Yeah, of course. So when you said like we wouldn't have to get tested if we're fully vaccinated/boosted, does that mean graduate students or is that the whole university?
So at this point, graduate students, specifically staff, faculty, if you are fully vaxxed and boosted, that twice a week testing will drop away. If you are not, it doesn't matter what your category is, you will drop into twice a week testing.
And when will a decision be made about the mask?
Masks are likely to be in place through the rest of the semester, most likely.
and we don't really know that. We discussed it today, most likely.
Yeah. Thank you.
Any other COVID questions for Dean Bohr?
Thank you for the food, whoever.
Oh, well, that's you all. But I was so happy to be able to tell you could.
Yeah. Yeah, big shout out to Wendy for getting that together for us.
Yeah.
Just another comment on Dean Bohr.
Quick question. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was sent information about from the employee assembly president. They're having a COVID panel with the provost and a bunch of the other administrative staff about COVID in the new semester, and that's going to be on Friday. It's kind of like a lunchtime webinar from 12 to 1. So Damien's going to forward that out to all of you guys if you're interested in going. It looks like that there's a Qualtrics for the questions, and that is the questions are due today. So if you're interested in going to that, submitting a question, I actually might attend as well. Any questions about that? Okay.
Yeah. I just had a quick question about events to make sure that, again, as we're like planning the spring gala, we're sure we're doing it correctly. For regulations, who should we go to as like our resource constantly to check in and make sure we're planning appropriately?
Okay. And so I sent President a link today off the COVID website, on the COVID website, over on the left, there's a menu. One item is events.
Perfect.
And if you want to know the latest update on events and what you can and can't do, right there.
Perfect.
Would you say that the campus groups website is a good tool as well? Is that as updated as the COVID website too? Okay. Yeah. The campus groups is usually a good resource for event planning and things of that such. Okay, so I guess with that, we can move to the open forum. Looks like we have a little bit under 10 minutes. Does anybody have anything they want to bring up for discussion, debate? I definitely think that with Liz's presentation, we should look into drafting kind of a resolution of support for that. I think that would be really awesome to do that as well. So if anybody wants to spearhead that, let me know. We can work with that. Probably within the Student Advocacy Committee as well. Yeah?
I know that people on the SA are also working on.
Okay.
And so if anyone wants me to connect them with the SA people, I can also do that.
Awesome. Yeah. If you're interested in that, reach out to Liz.
I think that's great, the idea of working with the SA. Do we ever meet with them as like a joint assembly?
I don't think so.
No.
Well, there's the university assembly.
Yeah, outside of the, yeah, we work with the university assembly and the SA, the university assembly. So that's a good, yeah, Wendy?
So just as a point of information, there is a GPSA liaison to the SA and vice versa. There's an SA liaison to the GPSA. Christine, I think she's on the call. She was the liaison last year to the SA, and Lucas Smith is your liaison here. So, I mean, anything that you all want to collaborate on, but I don't know that the GPSA liaison to the SA has been appointed or indicated who that is. So
I'm not sure.
We'll get that figured out.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of about what joint the collaboration is.
Yeah, I would say that we have a good relationship with SA. I've done a little bit of collaborating with their president, Anneli, this semester. So if anybody has any questions about what the SA is doing and things of that nature, I can connect you with her. So
I feel like it would be good to know if they have some kind of like a strategic vision for the issues that they're tackling this year, because maybe those are issues that we also want to talk about and just work on resolutions together for more power.
Yeah, sure. That's a great idea, yeah. Does anybody have anything else to add before we go? Okay. I would be entertaining a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Motion to adjourn.
Second. Okay. All right. Well, I will see you guys. We have a meeting, I believe, next week. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. With the scheduling, think we have like a February break, is that right? So with the February break, it kind of moved our schedule a little bit, and then we'll be back on the 2 week frame for that. So everybody have a great night, have a good week, and we will see you, up here next week, but we'll let you know if we decide to move across the hall or not. But it's looking like we might do that.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.